travel and trying to escape this futile. Who child is time to juggle is too wild. That's why we got more than two styles. To adapt in the situation, who child. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this time to wilderness. Swimming through the waters above and down like a rebel fish. Juggle is specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burning slave driver.
Welcome, listeners,
the black people of America,
the to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom." With all that, getting an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. We broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon. And you can stream the program live, even into your car, if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. And that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Different African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:09 in the city of Philadelphia, and we had a guest scheduled for this evening, but something must have happened. We'll talk a little bit about it when we come back to get the program started. So in the interim, we'll transition into open forum, which is always interesting with the listening audience. You can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:14 here in the city of Philadelphia. And before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellie.
How are you, sir?
Today it's been like a slow day for me. The temperature is dropping, I see, you know, so getting prepared for that. And
yeah, and, I know you and, are.
Seriously. looking forward to, I was looking forward to having our conversation with the guests we had planned. Around the land in Atlanta. In Georgia that was purchased. I thought that was, but things be as they are, I'm looking also now. I'm looking forward to having, you know, open forum and seeing what the listening audience have on their mind.
Yeah, for the some of the listeners that might not be wasn't aware, we were supposed to have the organizers of Freedom. I think it's called Freedom, Georgia. The town that's being established. I think 19 families got together and purchased 100 acres of land, and is going to start their own town. The organizers of that initiative was going to be on with us. They were scheduled to be on this evening. Something must have happened, but we'll try to work on having them on next week, or work on them having them on next week, or maybe the week after. They were scheduled for this.
Hello?
Hold on one second. I can see this person is anxious to really get on for open forum. So let's go right to him. Let's go to 678 in Atlanta. 678? Sister, what's your name? Where you calling from?
Hi, this is Renee Walters and Ashley Scott. We've been on the line forever.
Oh, boy. Oh, my goodness, sister. I thought that you were going to confirm that you were going to be on. When I didn't hear from you, I didn't know what was going on. But I'm glad that you're with us. No problem.
Now you see, we were just talking about how disappointed we would have been not to have this conversation, and here you are.
We're here.
I'm glad.
We didn't hear the star option. We didn't know we had to push anything to be heard. We were just saying hello, and then we heard called in a second time, and there was other steps. But I'm Ashley Scott. I'm the realtor and vice president of the Freedom Georgia Initiative. I'm happy to be here with you guys.
Okay, and is Ms. Walters on with us also?
Yes, she is.
Good. Ms. Walters, how are you? We talked a couple of weeks ago. I'm glad that you're with us. To talk about this project, it seems like an initiative that's a long time coming. Can you give our listening audience the genesis of what started you two women to organize these families to go down and purchase the land to start the town that is being proposed, that's being done? It's not being proposed, it's being done. Talk about the genesis of the idea that brought this into being.
Well, it all started with everything that we are going through with the unrest, the pandemic, watching Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd murdered. It kind of did something to us where we felt like we needed to take action to protect our family. We both have Black husbands, Black sons. So it was time for us to take matters into our own hands. We can't wait for anybody to protect us. It was something that we had to do for ourselves.
Now, this is Ms. Scott. Ms. Walters, it's the same thing?
That was Renee.
Okay, Renee. Ashley, was it the same thing with you? Were you two friends before, or you met under the circumstances of organizing for the project, or what?
No, we've been friends for over 6 years. We met at our church ministry in Stone Mountain, Georgia. We literally spend every morning, you know, saying our affirmations and setting up our day, commanding our day. And it had got to a point where we had felt as if it was going to be impossible to be the change we wanted to see if we, you know, it just felt so hard. Like, it was so much going on in the world. I felt distraught. I had to go to counseling at one point. And my Black therapist, thank God for her, helped me to see, you know, exactly that what we were dealing with was racial trauma. It was not something that was going to be an overnight fix. And it was something that was designed to make us feel disenfranchised and disempowered. And so going through that experience of therapy helped me to get a little bit of power back. And it really helped me with my friend when she sent me an article saying, hey, we could buy a whole town for $1.7 million. And it was like, oh, well, wait, as a realtor, maybe there is something I can do to help protect my family. Maybe there is something I can do. And so we took a trip down to Toombsboro, Georgia. And while we didn't necessarily have 1.7 $7 million at the time, we found some other pieces of land in the area. And it was clear to me that there was, you know, opportunity coming to Toomsboro with so many Black investors and Black realtors there. It just was a chance to take an opportunity and invite my friends, invite my family members to do something that had been done before, but that hasn't been done, you know, in this way, and hopefully to, you know, build a little generational wealth for ourselves. That was really the onus of it all.
Let me go back, because I want to go down that path that you're just talking about, that organization of this whole thing. But let me go back, because we have some Black therapy. We have a show on Monday night, comes on Time for Awakening Media, called Black Therapy Central. And they talk about the importance of having Black therapists. And I noticed that you mentioned that you were going through a lot of emotional things, and you went to the Black therapist and they told you exactly what you were dealing with. Just curious, if you had went to a white therapist, you think that they would have diagnosed what you just stated?
You know what? I can't imagine that a white therapist would have told me that I was dealing with racial trauma, because it's not in the DSM-4.
Okay.
And so what I would assume is that I would have gotten diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, or some other manner of disorder that is acceptable in society to write African-American, you know, clients off as. But being that I come from a historically Black college and university setting, I graduated with a BA in psychology from Bennett College in Greensboro, North Carolina. And when it was a decision to decide, well, am I going to go through a Eurocentric person, or do I want to go to an Afrocentric person? It made sense to me that I needed to see a Black therapist. I wrote a comment once. It's imperative to think about the fact that you shouldn't be going to your oppressors to try to fix your own trauma. It just makes no sense. So, you know, I decided to go to a Black therapist because I knew a Black therapist would understand my perspective.
Okay. Ms. Walters, Ms. Scott, what did it take, Ashley, sister, I'll just say Sister Ashley and Sister Renee, tell our listening audience what it took. You two sisters came up with this idea for you and your families. What did it take to organize 19 other people to make this move? And are they all from Georgia, or are they from different parts of the South, or from the North, or different parts of the country, period?
Well, it didn't take a lot at all. That probably was the easiest process of getting our friends and family together.
It was?
We got people that we've always talked about these things, but we got our closest friends and family, people that we've had conversations with. And so when Ashley and I sat on the land and said, well, hey, we can just go ahead and get our closest friends together, I said, you pick 10 of your friends, we pick 10 of our friends. And in the ticking, we just chose the like-minded friends that we had and the ones that we knew that it would be a no-brainer to say, yeah, I'm going to stick with you guys. I'm going to let you guys take us to glory, so to speak. And that's exactly what happened. Everybody was so excited about the presentation that Ashley and I put together that we had 10 people sign up that very night. And then we, like, the rest just had to mull it over with their spouses, think about it a little bit more. And we did have a few that declined. And then when they declined, we just found a couple of more of our friends, and they said yes. So that's how we formed the 19. It wasn't hard at all. We didn't have to chase after anybody. Once we gave them the presentation, everybody was excited and happy.
Richard, that's kind of shocking to me.
That's shocking to everybody. And that's what I want everybody to realize, that this stigma that we have that Black people can't come together and do something is not necessarily true. It's just not being televised. It's not being shown. In the media, we're always portrayed as argumentative, just portrayed in a negative light. And we want to show that these things do happen and we can be portrayed in a positive light.
Okay. Okay. Now let's talk about the historical significance of what you've done, because I mean, we know about Rosewood, we know about Wilmington, North Carolina, other Black towns, some of them still exist now. Talk about the move that you made in relation to our historical struggle here in this country, because I think it's significant, especially to our children, that seeing this and going to be a part of something that is theirs moving forward and will expand. I know it will expand. It's 100 acres now, and it's going to expand. But talk about do some of the children that's there, do they realize the significance of what's being done?
Yeah, I mean, I like to tell this story just because, you know, we understand the magnitude of the moment. We had every big name brand company stand up and say, oh, we believe in black equity, Black Lives Matter, Black Out Tuesday, just, you know, to try to express that they are appalled by the fact that African Americans are being slaughtered in the streets by the police that were there to protect and serve. But the reality is the issues of equity have been around long, long before we began the protests on the streets because of our brother George Floyd. And so the historical moment is we don't got to ask for reparations. We can go ahead and pull our money together and make a new Black Wall Street right before their eyes, and to be able to come together with all of the intelligent Black people, master's degrees, PhDs, master planners, entrepreneurs. We got everything we could possibly need within our own Black community to be able to build something that would have a wonderful foundation and that can create generational wealth for the rest of our families in perpetuity. Like, that's the reality. And we've been so far removed from each other. We're so, like, there's so much going on in the world, and with all of the disparities that are propagated in the media, you would believe that we don't have economic power, but we do. And for me, that's the magnitude of this moment, is that we can bring our resources together. We can amass land. We can create a community. We can bring our most brilliant minds together to plan it, to build it, to put Black broadband into it, to put machines that pull the water out of the air to make us completely self-sufficient. We can do all of that. And the time is now. That's the moment of the history. Like, people sat in their houses able to imagine what kind of a world we could create after we've been in the pandemic for so long now. And I think people are ready for the change because of all of the protests on the street. So it's like a melting pot of opportunity for us to finally get the equity we deserve. And all we really need to do is build it ourselves, and the sponsors and the corporations and government funds, I promise you it's going to follow. We've already seen what's been happening since we started this movement, and I think we need to do it not just in Georgia, but in states all over the United States of America.
And I agree. One thing that when you mentioned about reparations, and I'm glad that you placed it in the context that you did, because being a part of, we're a part of in COBRA, and also even with ADOS. And one thing that I've learned in relationship to reparations is that there's two types of reparations. One where you do self-repair, and then the other where the state repairs. And if I'm listening to you correctly, what you're talking about is the self-repair, that we can do this. We can repair ourselves, even personally. Your choice of, the choice of going to, a African-centered counselor is a part of that self-repair. And I think that that's important for our listening audience to hear, because a lot of time we keep looking at the others, what others can do for us compared to what we can do for ourselves. I'm curious though in this, and I am shocked that you were able. I am pleased and shocked that you're the network of friends and family to bring together the amount of resources necessary to secure this piece of land, real estate vision, was able to happen so quickly. I have to say, and that's a part of my repair and hearing y'all say that. Is it unfair for you to be able, for either one of you to give us as that kind of a short version of that presentation that you were given? And I think in your response to Elliot, you may have sent some of them elements, but a short version of the presentation that people really clicked and said, yeah, we need to be a part of it. We need to do this. We can do this. I will be a part of doing this. Can you do that for?
Well, the short version was telling people that the time is now, that there's an extreme sense of urgency in the midst of protests and the pandemic, that we as families secure ourselves by purchasing a piece of land and buying and creating agriculture so that we can feed ourselves, and putting in a lake so that we could have fishing and irrigation for ourselves, and building something that would be self-sufficient, so at the time of our retirement, we would be able to not worry about what's going on in the world around us, because we had created the world within that we knew we wanted to live in. So that was a short and sweet version of it, and people could see the benefit of being 2.5 hours away from the city and next to Oconee River, and able to enjoy the vast natural resources that Wilkinson County, a rural area, could provide. And we have to consider, you know, what our lives could really be like when we are in nature's bosom and able to enjoy the fruits of our labor and of the land, and being able to just kick back and enjoy what God will provide when we just let Him. Like, that is, you know, the most simplest way that most people should be living. We've gotten way too caught up in this Eurocentric point of view. And our plan is to retire as early as we can to the piece of land that we've created and start working on our passion jobs. All of our families are entrepreneurs, and they have businesses that they want to build. We can be able to be a self-sufficient community. And the excitement of bringing Black tradesmen and Black architects to help us build what we're building is even more exciting. And that's what it was all about for us, is being able to create generational wealth for our families, and the impact that we could have on other Black families just by sharing the story and sharing the work that would be available.
Now the, as I was thinking about, you know, the questions that we're going to ask you as part of this interview, and part of our motivational and educational aspects to be able to duplicate what you're doing, I was thinking of, I was looking at the Professor Juliet Walker. She did a history of Black African-American businesses from 1600 up into, and also Jessica Newhart did with Collective Courage, which is a book about cooperatives that were, and the thought came to ask, is this to where, because you have the land, are you, and it is in an area, Toomsburg, it does have, I guess, a population that lives around the land already. Are you looking forward for people to, say, immigrate, build homes, and be a part of this development? Or is it something that that in your visioning and design already have, like, pieces worked out for family members to live on or whatever? I'm asking, is this where you're asking people to come to build, be a part of that building process, or y'all already have a plan development for this the amount of acreage that you have?
Yes, we already have a plan of the amount of acreage that we have at this point. The 96 acres, the 19 families, they have selected all of the residential spots. So it's not open to the public for residential living. It is open to the public for recreation, as far as like having family reunions, having weddings, having retreats in our tiny home community. We want to have different retreats and events throughout the year. And we are looking to acquire a lot of the acreage around and surrounding us, because it is our hope to build a city. The city of Freedom, Georgia, but it will take a few more acres and a few more residents before we can start. But we do have a bunch of development teams in place, as well as architects, a whole bunch of black dope people that's going to help us build this community.
So that means there's you already acquired the land. You have the technical infrastructure to do the development. And I like the idea of taking, it's two things I heard that you mentioned, the technology where you can take moisture out of the air and produce water. I think that's, has already been developed and other places are utilizing that, and then create kind of like a resort area for people to come. So
yes, one of the eco-friendly and share it with the public.
Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, it takes back to the moments when another period where people were saying African Americans had to use the green book to go to certain places, and they created beaches. They bought into beaches so people can be able to come because they couldn't be able to go to white beaches and things like that. So you mentioned the resort. You mentioned farming. I guess I'm asking, so is this plan already formulated, or you're in the process of formulating the different components to the plans that you have, the land, you have the families, and you've already secured the space?
Well, we have all of the families, and we're working with our procurement officer to finalize what developers will actually draw out the master plan. So we don't actually have the master plan in place as of yet, but we do have a clear idea of the vision of what it is we want, where we want things to go. So we just have to work with the designers to develop all of those aspects. We also, like I said, are planning on acquiring more land. As a realtor, I'm working with talking to the neighbors just to see if they would be willing to, you know, sell some of these large tracts. These families have hundreds and thousands of acres that are just, you know, conserved for green spaces and farming. It's quite rural, this area, and very lovely. And so what our goal is to negotiate with the neighbors to try to get additional large acreages, 100 here, 200 there. And then eventually I'd like to be able to reach out to the very many families that have been reaching out to us to be able to say, hey, I've got this available for your group if you're ready to go. And I have a 3-hour seminar that I do that I actually teach people how to buy land. There's land all over the United States of America that is affordably priced, fertile, and exactly where we need to be headed in this current culture and current society. We need to go back to the land. And so I definitely think that people should email me at ashleyscott@kw.com. if they're interested in taking this seminar, and I'd be happy to help people to acquire more land. That's really the mission, is to acquire land, farm for yourself, teach your children yourself, start getting self-sufficient, and connect with this Black directory that we have built of Black innovators and architects and designers and builders. And let's start building it for ourselves.
I'm going to get you to repeat that email just several times before you leave this evening.
Okay.
We're in conversation with Sister Ashley Scott and Sister Renee Walters. They're the organizers of Freedom Georgia Initiative. I know that our listening audience have heard about it. They've read the reports in the media. Well, the sisters are on with us this evening talking about what they've accomplished and what they plan to do in the very near future. Sister Ashley and Sister Renee, is a lot of the land wooded? Do you have to clear out a lot of different areas, or is it flat? Is it already cleared?
Well, here's the thing. Every piece of property will be different. And as I said, I have to literally negotiate with the state. So some of the land will be cleared. If Georgia has rolling hills and lots of topography, the streets, wetlands. Mm-hmm. So you can get a large tract, let's say 175 acres, for instance. And it could have all manner of topography within it. It could have woods, it could have flat lands that'll be ready for you, like a beautiful open meadow to just start building. It may have creeks, so it's always going to depend on what area of land you purchase because it's so vast. There is such a mix and diversity of topography.
Okay. Sister Ashley and Sister Renee, when I talked to Sister Renee a couple of weeks ago, you were in the midst of having the blackout.
The black camp out.
The black camp out. Tell our listening audience, what happened during that weekend, the lot of events and things of that nature. Go ahead.
Oh, it was a wonderful event. A lot of people from all over came out. Shout out to Philadelphia, Chicago, our city represented.
Wait a minute. So somebody from Philly came down?
Yeah, a lot of people from Philly. A lot of people from Philly, Chicago, D.C., Virginia, Utah.
You want to drop some names? Richard is kind of popular up here.
I don't know about that, but I'm curious because I didn't hear about it, so I couldn't go get down and be a part of the which I would have loved to. Matter of fact, I have family in Georgia.
Oh, shout out to Brian Wilson. He's out there. He's a realtor. And he came down. Probably was a lot of the realtors and folks did.
Oh, okay.
They're following the story. So many people were following the city of Greensboro. And when we purchased that big piece of land next to it, they were excited to come and celebrate with us because it was something that had inspired them.
Now your voice is fading, Sister Renee. I don't know. I guess you're on a hands-free. But if you can get...
But I was just seeing how everyone was excited to come down. They came down in droves, and we celebrated for 2.5 days. And it was just an amazing feeling to see everybody come out. We had empowerment workshops. We had local artists, a live band, performances, a DJ. Like, it was just amazing. And we hope to have a big black camp out every year and our big black events throughout the year. So please stay tuned.
Yeah, send us the information. We'll put it out over the air and put it on the website. Sister Ashley, Sister Renee, you mentioned the importance now, and I guess a lot of our people really see the importance now of us starting to educate our own children. Now, you mentioned about some of the families that's there, and I know that once you start this project, or the project is already in motion, that you're going to draw black professionals to the area, whether they be doctors, you mentioned architects, educators. You probably have educators there already. Talk about the importance of us, because you're in a rural area, so I know you're going to set up schools, and that's probably some of your main things that you're doing or have plans to do now. Just talk about some of the infrastructure that is proposed there in the town.
Well, we're going to need a full city infrastructure at the appropriate time. Right now, because the land is so rural and we're trying to attract the community to it, it's going to be 3 to 5 years before we get to see a lot of the infrastructure that we're hoping for begin to take shape.
Mm-hmm.
So starting with just the recreation and agriculture is first, because that's what it's zoned for. That's what the rural community really needs to tap more of so that we can address the food deserts in the area. So we're not in a rush to try to overly develop this area to turn it into, the traditional urban sprawl that we're used to. We want to keep it as suburban and not really suburban. That's not even a good title for it. It's rural farmland.
Okay.
And so if anything, it's really a call to be, black homesteaders and pioneers and to teach your children for yourselves, to grow your own food and to... Like I said, we plan to have broadband access, but the point of the matter is let's become self-sufficient, and that's what our goal is with the people that we're attracting, people who plan to participate in the community economy so that we can begin to start making our own local products and have a hyper-local community that children – we will definitely have a community center and a place where students will be able, especially our black educators, to be able to do supplemental education – tutoring, enrichment, supplement, work with STEM, and all kinds of things. We also are talking about, having aviation school and all manners of things, but we don't want to get into the full business plan because at the end of the day, we are all dreaming of a black utopia together, And we have some community workshops that we'll be doing over the next few weeks so that we can bring in the voices of the people who have reached out, who want to be able to participate in building Freedom Georgia, because we don't have all of the answers. We have a vision, and we want all of our community members that anticipate purchasing land nearby and helping us to build it to help us manifest the vision by filling in all those fine details.
If I may, one thing that came to my mind in looking at the Toomsboro has a large, relative to its size, has a large Black African-American community. How have they, have there been any, since you started this process and engaging in it, has there been any communication with the community, the existing Black community there? And if so, how have they responded to this vision that you're presenting?
Yes, there have. We've been in communication with the mayor, the chief deputy police, the sheriff's office. We've been in contact with a bunch of residents here. Everybody is looking forward to us coming. They're looking forward to us bringing jobs here, agriculture and farming there. Everybody's excited, and they've been very welcoming.
Let's take a couple calls here. Callers, you can get involved in the conversation and ask the sisters anything you want. Sister Ashley Scott and Sister Renee Walters of the Freedom Georgia Initiative by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Let's go to 267. 267?
Hey, good evening, Elliot. I want to say good evening to Richard and your guest. I was just listening to her talking about the education, and I was going to ask her, like, especially since I'm into construction, would they think about, and I'm thinking about investing down there, to be honest with you, but far as, like, construction, will you have, like, a trade school? Because I think that would be more beneficial to a rural town that's trying to be self-sufficient if we had tradesmen that we were actually teaching to go out there and build up our own town. How do you two sisters feel about that?
That's the part. Like I said, we didn't want to get into all the details of our business plans, but yes, an apprenticeship program is one of the very first things we intend to implement. And so one of our sister, our strategic partners, Ms. Jessica Lewis of Mobil Enterprises and ShippingLiving.com, that's ShippingLiving.com. She's a Black woman who has a business helping to build construction out of shipping containers. And the sky is not the limit. She is able to convert those shipping containers into all manners of commercial and residential buildings. And her program actually teaches people how to do that. That sister's based in Georgia in Macon County. She has a program that's already in place with Macon to do these apprenticeship programs. So we're not inventing the wheel. We intend to bring the partners with us who've already been doing this work to be able to teach our people, including the families, how to do, trades. And we have electricians as well as, we've got all manner of people who are excited about teaching apprentice programs and mentorship programs. So that is indeed one of the things that we will be doing.
Right. Well, I've been into the electrical trades about 40 years now, and I'm an electrical inspector and engineer now. So I was just wondering, I would say, like, this is a good opportunity. Plus, I still teach. I'm using the Zoom format now. But I was just saying this is an excellent opportunity, especially when we talk about some of our young men or whatever. A trade school is exactly what our community needs. And I just wanted to know, was that on your plan? I know you said you're not going to really get into that right now, but I would like to talk to you at a later date just to see how I could contribute and even invest. So I'm going to take your information and get back in touch with you. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you for your call, brother.
All right.
Right.
All right, man.
Let's go to 404. 404.
Hey, peace and blessings, Elliot and Richard and my sister. Hey, I'm outside Atlanta in Norcross, right? I'm an electrician too. But what I'm thinking is when y'all start selling your produce, say your free range meat, beef, and all that, I want to buy some of that. That's why I'm going to do my investment for your produce. And if you can still hear me, I'm going to get your information, but I just want to say something to y'all, okay? The blueprint already been set for y'all with the ancestors, so I'm going to leave y'all with just something here to think about for all of us, okay? A wise person learned from their own mistakes. A genius learned from the mistakes of others.
That's
so
right.
I just put that out there so y'all to check and see where our ancestors made a mistake so y'all don't make the same mistake. And that's where I look at it. Check the history, and then you know where our ancestors messed up at, and don't make the same mistakes. And God bless y'all. And I'll probably be checking y'all out because I'm up here in North Carolina, outside Atlanta. And God bless y'all. And I'm gonna get you information, and we gonna talk. I appreciate y'all. Stay strong. Stay
blessed. Thank you, and we appreciate that word of advice. I think y'all gonna be pleased with Scott Bruin because we do think the history of our ancestors is very serious. So we plan on doing lots of research that will prepare us for this mission and this vision.
Thank you for your call, brother.
Yes, sir.
Let's go to 919, North Carolina, 919. 919, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. They must have stepped away. Sister Ashley, Sister Renee, I know that you've got a lot of media attention the past month, people are interested in what you're doing. I'm just curious. Have any of the officials down there reached out to y'all, elected officials, for help, offering any resources that what you might need?
We've had lots of people from all over, not just in Georgia, but all over the country. People have been reaching out with resources and options and opportunities. We had a brother from Wilkinson County just the other day, the former county manager, reached out and offered any kind of help that he's had. Like we said, the sheriff of Wilkinson County came out to meet us. We've gotten great reception from the county. We've already got our business registered with the county of Wilkinson County, so they know we're there. They're excited about what's happening. So no one necessarily reached out because it's COVID-19, and it's a one-woman show, really, in the office of Wilkinson County.
Okay.
It's a very small place. It's less than 10,000 residents there, spread out over 7 cities, and we hope to be the 8th city. And we haven't heard any kind of negative, you know, anything other than being proud that we put Wilkinson in the spotlight the way that we have.
Good, good. Let's go to 602. 602.
Good evening, Brother Elias and Brother Richard, and good evening to your guests. I wanted to ask one question pertaining to, when you're giving the history of America, Wall Street, Asheville, what do you have to out? What about security? Because we have to remember what happened in the past. And the brother was talking about security is a big issue because we know that we live in a hostile environment. So what plan do you have on securing your thing so that people don't sabotage it?
Sister, did you hear?
Our team would be mad at us for telling our security plans, but just know we do have security plans in place, and we have a whole defense team.
Good.
Okay, great.
Did you hear that, brother? Okay, he's not there. Okay, wow. All right, sister, you told him, you laid it right out. Let's go to 646. 646.
What's going on, Elliot, Richard, and to your guests? I tell you, this is some of the best news I've heard this year. In regards to what your sisters and your families are doing. This is the direction that we should be going in as African people, fighting yeah. and creating sovereignty for ourselves. I would just like to say this, backing up what you just said, sister. You know what happened with Tulsa? You know what happened with Rosewood? First thing we must do is secure the safety of you and your families. Second, you must definitely get as much insurance as possible to be in the position to recover any type of damages these savages may push upon you. And importantly, and most importantly, when these people who I've heard have come after you in regards to doing television shows and all that, the best news I heard was when y'all said that y'all wanted to be able to control the narrative of the story. Thank you, sweet baby Jesus, for allowing y'all and the ancestors to have the intelligence for y'all to know that y'all must control and have ownership of the narrative of what y'all are creating and doing. Because they'll try to turn y'all into some sort of revolutionary separatist animals if you let them control the narrative. So I'm just so happy. And, you know, hey, at some point in time, I hope you get a chance to come down and witness this greatness and, you know, maybe invest in it. But please, sisters, you and your families, each stick together and protect one another, because you know something? The white man is coming for you based on this greatness and what you're doing. And it seems to me that y'all have an understanding and y'all prepared to deal. So congratulations. Keep up the good fight, and I can't wait until it's built so that I can see it before I leave this planet. Have a good day.
Thank you for your call, sir. Sister Ashley, Sister Renee, you got a few more minutes to stay with us?
We actually don't. We have another call, a meeting that we have to go to right at 8 o'clock.
Good. Well, listen, I'm going to reach out to you in the near future after y'all kind of get settled and moving maybe to the next phase. The door is always open to you to come on and let our listening audience know what's going on. And
All right, thank you.
Send me some information. I'll put it on our website, because we're on the Black Talk Radio Network here. We have a certain core audience that is very interested in what you're doing.
Yes, thank you so much.
And before you leave us, give out that contact information again.
Okay, I'll let Ashley. What am I doing? Oh, again, yes, please. You can find us at www.freedomgeorgia.com. You can follow us on Instagram or Facebook at FreedomGA2020. And you can reach me if you're looking to purchase or sell real estate or get involved with our real estate seminar by emailing Ashley Scott at kw.com.
Hey, Ms. Scott, before you leave, being that you're a realtor by profession, have any other folks reached out to you from other areas to try to duplicate what you're doing?
Yes, we got a lot of things down the pipeline. My 3-hour seminar is a great place to start. It's a $75 investment, and I teach people every single thing that we did, how to find the land, how to put together your presentation. It comes with a PDF guide, an action guide, and a Facebook group where serious and like-minded investors from all over the country are conversing and sharing resources together and having conversations about how they can do this in their locations, from Houston, Texas, to North Carolina, to Florida, to Alabama, Philadelphia, and Pennsylvania. All kinds of people have come to this seminar. I literally sell tickets almost every day. I have the live seminar every 2 weeks, but you get the instant replay so that you can get the information immediately, and then you can know what questions to ask on the live seminar when we do it. Our next seminar is September 24th, and then it will be again 2 weeks after that.
So if you just email me again at ashleyscott@kw.com, we'll get you the seminar link. And that's a great way to get started and connect with other people who want to do this work in their location.
Good. Listen, I'll be in touch with you, sisters. I'm going to keep the door open for you so you can let us know what's going on. And I want to tell Sister Kenya that's been in communication with me to thank you.
Yes, absolutely, we will. Thank you so much for having us. God bless you all, and we just look forward to building something for ourselves. You guys have a good night until freedom comes.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll transition in open form for the rest of the way. And you can, even the callers that was on, if they want to call back, they can do that. And you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American-owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kamban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we are black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lauren Green sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip, and you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back. The time for an awakening is 8:12 here in the city of Philadelphia, and I want to thank Sister Ashley Scott and Sister Renee Walters from the Freedom Georgia Initiative that stayed with us a little over now to share with the listening audience what they're doing down there in Freedom, Georgia, what they have planned. Richard.
Yeah. It was a surprise. It was a pleasant surprise that we thought we weren't going to have them on.
I know. Yeah, she kind of, I thought that they would, call me back and say, oh, we're going to be on, because usually folks do that, but they knew the time, and they just said, we're going to jump on here, and that's good. That's good. I'm glad that they were with us to share with us things going on. The sisters and their families, they talked about their husbands and their children. They seem like they have their heads on straight, Richard. They know what they're doing. They've looked at some of the mistakes and successes of our ancestors, if you hear them talking, and they're going full steam ahead, man. The thing that surprised me, Richard, and it all depends on the circle of people that you're dealing with. The thing that surprised me is how easy it was. She said it was easy for them to cultivate 19 families, and since she said it was even more, but they had to kind of, people had to kind of bow out. So,
which raises the question, is it that, we talk about being brainwashed and the effectiveness of propaganda? Is it because they were bringing a narrative of that it really isn't that hard, and the imagery that is projected about how difficult it is isn't really true? And then they're giving a living example that it isn't true, that we do wish to get together and whatever. So I guess I think that we should, keep that in mind when we even be a part of projecting the difficulty of things, when it may not be as difficult as we're told and maybe carry that it is.
Yeah, well, I guess you're right. When I talked to Sister Renee, I guess about 2 weeks ago, they were in the midst of that the black gathering that they were having down there. I was just surprised it was people from all over. She said Philadelphia and other areas. Right. So, listen, Richard, it's a blessing to have to do what we're doing on this program to showcase, and we talk about this constantly, showcase people from all over, people that are doing things, not just saying, oh, we hope to do it. I think we can do it. They're doing it. And it's serious.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was good to have them on. They'll be back on again, believe me, listening audience. Once they move maybe into some of the next phases, I know they'll be back on with us to give our folks an update. People got their contact information. If not, I'll make sure it goes onto our site so people can contact them and maybe get involved with some of the seminars. She said that people have been contacting them from other areas to get them to duplicate what they're doing in other areas for other people. So that's great.
Yeah, it definitely is.
You know, we'll transition into open forum. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. Some of the other callers that came on first to talk with them, we'll kind of recycle back if they want to add some other things. Richard, I want to mention something. And you kind of followed the breadcrumbs when you looking at some of a certain segment of our people that always want to curry favor with either the Democratic or Republican Party. Because anytime you curry in favor with whites that are in power, it's always an attachment with it or an obligation out of you to do something that they want, to do their bidding. It's nobody independent dealing with these folks. It's always some strings attached. You might not see the strings, almost like a marionette puppet, but if you look closely, you'll be able to see the connections. If you remember, Richard, and I pulled the article up. Let me see if I can pull it up just for the date. It was around March of 2017 when Trump met with leaders of HBCUs. You remember that?
Right.
And, you know, talked about he was going to support them, give them money, things of that nature. Now, and if you look, they mentioned some of the HBCU presidents that were in attendance at the meeting. Now, it's an article here that was from about 3 weeks ago that talked about the millions of dollars that Howard, Morehouse, and other HBCUs is receiving for COVID-19 testing from this Thermo Fisher scientific group. Let me just read a couple lines here. It says, besides Howard and Morehouse School of Medicine in Georgia, Meharry Medical College in Tennessee, Xavier University in Louisiana, Hampton in Virginia were included in the pool. Everything that we do is around the advancement of the African-American diaspora, and I think it's important that we continue to stay connected. Says Wayne Frederick, president of Howard. It says Xavier University of Louisiana is the only Catholic HBCU in the nation and was a good fit to be included because of its biomedical science program, says President Reynold Verrett. We are the first college of pharmacy that was established in Louisiana in 1930s, and we are only one of two. We produce more African-Americans to go to medical school than any school in the country, and we've been doing it for many years. The proximity to other black colleges was also a big factor. We are in the city, New Orleans, with three HBCUs, and in the state of Louisiana, we have six. So if we think about our region, we also reach out to our sister schools in Mississippi and Tupelo as well. And we wanted to facilitate the opening and continuing education at HBCUs to have testing capability. And it makes it work it makes our work a little bit easier. So we see that it was money allocated to certain HBCUs. Keep in mind the initial meeting with Trump that some HBCU presidents was at. Right?
Right.
Now we move ahead. You have, now if anybody that follows sports knows anything about the Mannings, his father, Archie, and the two brothers, the one, they were all Republicans. Now, this article here, dated a little over a week ago, says Peyton Manning's charities endows HBCUs, and Doug Williams is surprised. It talked about the money that was given to HBCUs in his area. He grew up in Louisiana, these Mannings, and he went to school in Tennessee. And they were giving money to the HBCUs and putting it in the name of prominent graduates. Doug Williams, who was the first black quarterback to win a Super Bowl, mentioned that he was surprised because evidently he didn't know anything about it until he was contacted. And they sent money to Southern University in the name of Harold Carmichael. Anybody from Philadelphia knows who Harold Carmichael was. In the name of Tennessee State and Wilmer Rudolph, and sent it around to HBCU, six of them, and four in his home state, Manning's home state of Louisiana, and two in Tennessee, where this money was sent around to by Manning. In fact, it wasn't him directly. It mentioned his foundation. It says here the Peyton Manning Foundation is honored to be partnered with these six colleges. So it was money sent around to these particular schools. Mm. So we got a little trail of breadcrumbs here. We first got some of the presidents, not all of them did, some of the presidents of these HBCUs that met with Trump. You got money allocated at certain schools for, as they said, testing. And then you got the Mannings, or Manning, giving money to schools in his area where he grew up and went to college, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now we got this particular article. It was in the Griot. About 3 days ago. It says two HBCU presidents want students got involved with vaccine trials and want students to follow. It says the presidents of two Louisiana historically black colleges and universities have announced their participation in COVID-19 vaccine trials, and they are encouraging the students to do the same. Walter Kimbrell of Dillard and Reynold Verrett of Xavier released a joint statement on September the 3rd. They wrote, "Overcoming the virus will require the viability of vaccine effectiveness for all peoples in our communities, especially our black and brown neighbors. It is the utmost importance that a significant number of black and brown subjects participate so that the effectiveness of these vaccines can be understood across the many diverse populations that comprise the United States. We appeal to the students and the alumni of Dillard and Xavier and our sibling institutions to consider participating in the trials to be conducted." In the statement issued, "The people and the communities we serve look at us as an example. Our participation in such studies will help find ways to fight this pandemic." And then some people responded on Twitter. I'll read a couple of the tweets. It says, "As an alumni, I am deeply disappointed at this. We are not guinea pigs," wrote one user. ask government officials to be the first in line, not us. Shame on Verrett, Reynold Verrett, which is the president of Xavier. Many other Twitter users compared the president's participation trials to the Tuskegee experiments where black men were unwittingly studied for untreated syphilis. As an HBO student, I am disappointed in this decision, especially seeing the results of African Americans being experimented on. The student at the HBCU should definitely sign up for vaccines experiments, wrote another. The students at HBCU should definitely sign up for vaccine experiments after the students from Yale, Harvard, Princeton, and Stanford. They will get the money to do. Okay. All right. Now I'm not going to read all the rest of these tweets. But, okay, Richard, now, first it was the meeting with Trump. And if you look back, this Kimbrell here from Dillard was at that meeting. He made statements to Trump. I did see his name mentioned. I assume that this Reynold Verrett of Xavier was there also. Now, both of them, at least one of them, was at the meeting. Then you see trials being money being sent around to certain HBCUs, which was the second article I read. Then the third article talked about Manning giving money to HBCUs in his home state and in Tennessee. Dillard and Xavier is in Louisiana. Now, here's the last article, because it was a church pack that sent out a letter, made a statement about this. And I guess even a broken clock is right twice a day. It says, Black Church Pack urges HBCUs not to force black students to participate in COVID-19 trials. And this was at issued in the Scanner, Richard, which is that black newspaper out there in Oregon. It says the Black Church Pact today urged the presidents of Dillard and Xavier, both historically black colleges, to refrain from offering their students as guinea pigs for the controversial and untested vaccine trials. Given the black community's troubling experience with the American medical system, experience that includes the dreadful and deadly Tuskegee experiments, where scores of black people were injected with syphilis and forced sterilizations and the harvesting of medical information without disclosure to the victims or families, this faith-based advocacy organization warned that it's too soon to ask black students to participate in trials.
Say it's too soon.
With black people being disproportionately impacted by COVID-19, less likely to get tested, and less likely to be taken seriously upon presentation at some doctor's offices and hospitals, no leader should urge black students to participate in trials at this time, says Pastor Michael McBride, co-founder of the Black Church Pact. Students and their families are voicing concerns about being pressured to participate in these trials, urging students to get the vaccine at a time when many in the nation are questioning the safety and effectiveness, is traumatizing and puzzling. The presidents of Dillard and Xavier of Louisiana should immediately disclose if they are being paid to urge students to participate in trials and explain the underlying motivation for offering students as lambs to be slaughtered. As a leader of the historically black college and university, the chief constituency, these leaders should be serving its students. This latest stunt calls into question their loyalties and motives. So, like I said, Richard, sometimes a broken clock is right twice a day. I do applaud this letter sent out by this Black Church Pact. calling out those black college presidents that's urging their students to get involved in this, knowing the track record of this country and the historical dossier that they left, and not only Tuskegee experiments, plenty of other experiments, forced sterilization of women in North Carolina, all types of trials that they was doing with our people locked up behind these prison walls, that they have a track record of using our people as guinea pigs. Now, because some of these presidents appeared to Trump and got, evidently they got money. It showed that they got money. Money delivered to some of these organizations, HBCUs, and money here from Manning. And they probably got other money that's not disclosed. So all of a sudden, they're going to encourage students to take some experimental vaccines. Some of these people are a disgrace. They're worse than those two that was involved, and it was probably more. That Rivers, Nurse Rivers, and that other doctor that was involved and talked to our people into being involved in this Tuskegee experiments.
Mm. Yeah, it's
I just wanted to read that because initially when you read those things, listen, when I'm in a place of business and guy came in, you know, you hear all types of conversations. Guy came in talking about, oh, did you see Manning gave money to HBCUs? Oh boy, man, that's great. A lot of white folks' minds is changing. So I'm saying like, huh? And if you do even a little cursory research, you'll find all types of skeletons in these. And I just did a little cursory background. I didn't even do no research. You can see where the trail of breadcrumbs and exactly where it's leading. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make mention of that because these two presidents of these two black colleges are a total disgrace. And the people that have their children there at those schools, and even if you don't have children there at those schools, need to write letters and get them clowns out of there.
Mm-hmm.
How dare they take money, talking about they're going to take some trials. If you believe they took some experimental drug, then my name is George Bush. But they're going to encourage black students there to take some experimental drugs. And you know, Richard, when you take them experimental trials, and you may not know, but I really assume that when you take them experimental trials, that you are taking on all the liability. So you can't turn around and try to sue the government if something go wrong. If you start growing two heads or three eyes.
That is the case when you do those experimental. Whether the hospital is, the hospital is asked to do it, or in this case, a college university is asked. When they're asked, they're given they have to sign on to an agreement that they hold that the company that's doing the testing takes no liability if anything occurs.
I mean, some of these students have trouble staying in schools because they can't get the proper monies and all to keep their education going. And these clowns got the nerve to be encouraging students to take some trials. I'm telling you, listen, man, Richard, some of these black folks, a percentage of these black folks are a total disgrace. And that's I'm talking about the ones that's involved in both parties. They're a disgrace.
Yeah, it's you know, for me, Elliot, though, it's a couple of difficult, it's a couple of, well, interesting and a couple of difficult questions that arise or maybe approach in this, and I could see something coming out of me in relationship to, just because it's a lot of money being given to HBCUs right now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
No. And I don't think it, you know, and it's not necessarily just in the realm of medical trials, but just in the realm of, you know, supposedly in dealing with, you know, the things coming out of the George Floyd and the unrest that's happening in the community. I believe that's why, you know, these foundations and companies are giving so much money to these HBCUs. I think it's a broader issue.
A broader strategy.
Occurring.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, in relationship to, you know, cultivating the new crop of future black leadership or perceived black leadership, or ones who will be acceptable within the corporate structure, providing, you know, that instead of having them go to PWIs, primarily white institutions, you know, they'll cultivate them in historically black institutions and then bring them out, and they'll have a certain mindset and whatever. So I see that. That's one thing going on.
You see it now. Look at the current vice presidential candidate or nominee. She came out of Howard.
Right.
So it's just like you said. They're using it to cultivate more and more folks that can kind of go along with what you just stated. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening. I hear y'all nailing it. I just want to put this part in. When I heard Richard say this, and I'm going to speak for Richard with Richard present to correct me if I'm wrong. When you said there's a lot of money going to HBCUs, I just want to make it plain to you. When I first saw this coming up 3 or 4 weeks ago, I first saw a hint of this on the HBCU Digest. Then this stuff started flowing over the last 10 days. What I'm saying to you is, no, they are publicizing giving money to somewhere between 6 and 10 actual HBCUs. But what they're not telling you when you read through the HBCU president's newsletters and stuff, you got 8 to 10 HBCUs that are not even sure they're going to be able to survive this corona thing because the CBC hadn't gotten any money to them. There's about 107 actual HBCUs. And let me put this part in and then I'm going to stop because I got more research, but I don't want to take over the conversation. The majority of the ones that are going under, several of them have already become, as Jared Ball them say, the whitest HBCUs. Understand, this is really a misdirection play, letting the flagship ones get money.
Oh, yeah.
And the rest of them are still sinking. I trust. Yeah. Be strong, my brothers.
Okay. Thank you for your contribution. Great point.
And cultivating the future that black middle income, middle class, you know.
Wow.
Because those schools are not cheap to go to. I mean, even in relationship to black. But that money thing is one thing that is interesting to me. And the other thing, Elliot, if I may, is that is what's interesting is on our side, and that I would like at some point, you know, I'm exploring in my own mind, I'll say that. Because if you notice, when issues come up, and I think for black people, I think black people do it more than I've heard it done anywhere. We always place things in our historical context. So the Tuskegee experiment becomes the framework for us in relationship to how we view things. What happened out of Reconstruction becomes the framework of how we view them. When we had the interview with the sisters, you know, in relationship to Blacktown, people framed it, you know, as even from the security part, comes out of a historical context. I believe that we place things in relationship to our experience more outwardly in a historical context. So when that group of churches or whatever sent the letter, they are responding from a historical context of, no, you ain't gonna allow. Now, this is the Tuskegee in that period. And as you say, there's been other experiences, but we know that that was the most gross. And we use that as the linchpin of our concern in dealing with things. I think that's another interesting point of how much history is important to us in understanding an event that may be happening now and how we feel or think about it. I thought that was interesting too.
Mm-mm-mm. Wow. It's going to be a development story behind this. I just hope that, you know, a lot of our people become aware. If you've got children or family members, nephews, nieces, or whatever that goes to any of these schools that they're proposing participating in these trials, you write these to the presidents, start a network of people, even if you don't go to those schools. This type of stuff can't be allowed. How do you encourage your students there at those schools just like the one person that tweeted the message. You asked HBCU after you asked students at Harvard and Yale. I mean, what the hell you going to come? These people are a disgrace, man. Listen, I can see why in South Africa when they was fighting for independence, although we see now that things went off the rails as far as, you know, some of the independence fighters wanted true sovereignty, but they end up getting something else. Mm-hmm. But I'm not even that's another story. But you can see why when they was fighting for independence, they took and put tires around some of them people, flaming tires, what do they call it, necklacing. You can see why mm-hmm. they did that, Richard. Some of these people are a total disgrace. But the thing is, we don't have no means to punish them yet. That's why they don't feel some. They don't feel no type of. They don't feel no. They look at themselves in the mirror and they smile because they're getting paid.
And this is another point that comes out of this, Elliot, that I think is an uncomfortable conversation based off of, you know, just what is being said and how it's being presented. The question of at what point is COVID real, you know, to the African American and as a virus, and knowing that, because what I understand, and I might be wrong about this, but even the vaccines that are being developed are being developed from a biotechnology perspective, in the sense of the virus is not using a natural virus to kill a virus. They're constructing a virus. If it's real and we have a propensity, should we at all as a people be a part of the trials in order to be able to create a vaccine that really works for, and I'm on the assumption that African people have a specific biochemical makeup, genetic makeup, that works for our biochemical genetic makeup. That's one question that, you know, I think we need to have, and I think it is, based off of the reaction, it will be an uncomfortable conversation because we're making the choice of don't do anything, or we have to do something. And well, then the other thing in that vein, as far as these leaders of in the HBCUs, it's one thing when a company come to you and say I want to use you for something. It's another thing when you say, well, I know I need to have this done, and I'm looking out there and going to choose which one that I see has the best ethics, bioethics, the best the best approach, and have a genuine procedure that works for the population that I'm a representative of. And of them out there, this is the one that I select. I think that's different than one coming to you and say, here's some money, let us use your people.
Yeah, well.
And that's a question of leadership to me.
Oh, certainly. I do agree with that wholeheartedly. But let me mention something on what you just said, and then we'll double back around to these phones. You can see worldwide, this is affecting people worldwide. And pandemics have went across the world long before Europeans came up with technology to spread diseases. So we can see that this is real from that standpoint. But as far as cases that has affected people on the continent, they have the lowest cases of any other nationality, any other country around the world. The lowest cases is on the continent of Africa. So keeping that in mind and looking here and seeing where our people is being disproportionately infected, it's been stated clearly why our people are being disproportionately affected here, because of lifestyles and diet and other things. There are other contributing factors. So it would behoove us as a people to look at other ways to protect themselves against this virus than just waiting on this man to come up with vaccines. I mean, we've had people talk about building your immune system by changing your diet, which is very sensible. we've read on the air about certain things that they're already using in the continent to control the virus.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to pull up some of those things that we had talked about. In certain of the countries, the countries in Africa, they was using certain other natural things to control this virus. You remember when we read some of those things, Richard?
Right, right.
And then you got the Cuban doctors with this interferon alpha B. I hope I got that right. So it's other alternatives and things that we can look into as a people. But the leadership, like you said, the leadership, this appointed leadership of black folks is pointing our people in different directions. Now you got college leadership appointing students to take unproven trial vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, listen, the information is out there, and we can do better as a people. In fact, we're going to do better as a people, but it just pains you to hear some of these stories coming out because some of our people don't realize what's going on. Some of our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge because they're not aware. It's not that our people are stupid. We got just as much sense as anybody else and a lot of times more, but we don't have the information. A lack of information. Let's go double back around to the and let me before we do that, let me see whether Brother Otis wanted to finish his thought. Let's go back to Newport News. Any last comment, Brother Otis?
Oh, bro, you nailed it. All I was gonna say to you is you being kind to you when you say some of them for lack of knowledge. No, I'll be honest with you, bro. I'm old enough to tell you some of them just greedy. That bag, it's just sad. I've seen it in so many disappointments with that. They know the right thing to say, but when it come down to it, they're going to try to get theirs, bro. Say, be strong. Love right.
Say, say, get that bag.
Let's go to 267. 267? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 919. 919? Let's put them back on hold. They got a little something going on there. They must be having a party. Let's go to 215. 215? 215, are you there? 215. Let's skip them. Let's go back around. Let's do it once around again. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elliott, Brother Richard. You know, Amos Wilson said something. He said, in order for the minority white people who are on the planet, they are the minority on the planet, they have to recruit from the same group of people they are oppressing to stay on top. In reference to that, the same thing you're talking about here is happening in Jamaica right now. A couple of months ago, Dr. Bill Gates, because now he's a medical doctor, you know, he's a professional on the virus, was in Jamaica, gave the prime minister a bag of money. The prime minister ran a snap election, won the election, all of a sudden, the COVID cases shot up. So what they're going to do now in Jamaica, they're going to use the island as a test, as a testing ground, because you know, everybody in fear in the island, COVID going around, COVID killing everybody. So in order for you know to come to America, you're going to have to get a shot. They're going to have to give you that COVID shot, you see? So these people are just some Machiavelli diabolical people. I'm telling you, I wouldn't be surprised they're the one who put this thing out in the world. I'm telling you, because they are evil to the core. I'm telling you. But that is taking place. The same thing is taking place at the HBCU right now. It's finna happen in Jamaica. They're getting ready to vaccinate everybody because they got everybody in fear down there. So we got to watch out and be careful. Take care, brother. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution.
Before you go to the next caller, you know, and I don't know if we had talked about this already because another thing we have to, as a people, a community, when they do come out with the virus, the question of making it mandatory, especially for children. You know, what is our position if they say you got to take the vaccine in order to get and to go to school, to go into a public school? You can't be allowed. That's forcing. And they already have that in place, you know, and you was able to get opt out because of religious reasons. But what happens when you're not able to opt out at all because of, as you know, brother said, you know, that they're saying everybody has to take, especially children, have to take this vaccine.
And you know that's coming. Mm. The good thing about it is a lot of the children nationally are not in school right now. They're virtual. So hopefully our people will start going in a different direction. Yeah, so let's move around again. Double back some of the callers here. Let's go to let's go back to 404.
Hey, right on, Elliot. Good. Hey, you hear me?
Yes, sir.
My brother.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, man. Right on. You right on with this shit back there. I'm glad you put it out there, man. You read the letter and everything, man. And see, I go to Morehouse, man. And so I'm going to have I knew they had got the $200 million, but I ain't know if they got it. They just say they got the money on the news. They didn't say where it was from. So if I find out that they running this test on these students, and particularly the other people they going to play on, is the poor people in around the neighborhood, around these schools, like they did Tuskegee. They got most of the poor people in the neighborhood for some money to take this vaccine. See, that's what I was talking to the sister about. Look at the mistakes of the ancestors, man. Okay? And if we fall for this, man, bro, I'm going to have a talk with my doctor, man. Because another thing is, whenever y'all go somewhere, do not let them put that damn thermometer thing upside your head. Put that thing on your wrist, and they can take your temperature good off your wrist, man. You don't want that thing around your brain, man. Okay? But, bro, you right on the money. And another thing is they got these, in these neighborhoods now, they got mostly brothers coming in there to leave their classroom for some money, man. Especially in Chicago, just check around in Philadelphia. I guarantee you gonna see people they got lined up to give up their plasma, man. Our people again falling for it, man. Okay, and I'm just like you, Rich. It's up to us, the people, to say hell no, we not taking this shot. Matter of fact, don't even take the test, man. Don't even let them stick no Q-tip down your nose, man. To give you a DNA, bro. Yeah, our people got to cut this crap out, man. Okay, because the ones that do it, hey, God going to bless them, and if you don't, I'm going to bless them. And I ain't going to feel sorry for them now, man. We in the age now being stupid because you want to be, man. Okay? But, hey, that's good, man. All of us stand up and say, we not taking nothing, man. Only shot I'm taking is in a glass with the ice in it, man. Okay?
Hey, Richard. Richard, what's the matter?
Yeah, I love y'all, man.
He said,
"Glass
with ice."
Oh my God!
I have to something when about the temperature thing, and this is a you know personal thing, side thing. I recently went to the Franklin Institute here in Philadelphia, and they open, but in order to go in, you got to take your temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting to me was all you had to do was sit, stand on this pad. And they had the scale, you know, in front of you. So by standing on the pad, you could see your temperature numbers come up. So they didn't have to put the thing to your forehead or your wrist. Just by how do they get the heat from me standing on the pad? I didn't put my hand on anything, just standing on the pad, and it read my temperature.
Okay.
And then they let you in.
Yeah, well, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, I was just, I never seen or heard about that before, so that was interesting to me.
Yeah, those same things, because they required, you know, when we opened back up that we had to do that. We had to take a temperature and you know, wear masks. But those same ones that you can put it to people's forehead, but you don't have to. You can put it on their finger. You can put it in other areas, and it'll still read the body temperature. Yeah, so, you know, some people don't want it to be, and, you know, it's no problem. But, yeah, you can still read it in other ways. You don't have to put that thing. You know, some people do it because, you know, it's easier for them to just raise it up and take your temperature. But you don't have to take it from there.
Oh, interesting.
Let's double back. Let's go to 646. 646.
Hey, Richard. Elliot, man. Good show tonight. Listen, you know, it's really kind of amazing. I don't know if I spoke about this Friday or not, but it's really amazing the behavior of our people in regards to this whole situation with RBG. And it damn sure ain't the red, black, and green. This on Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her dying. Now, you know, I don't have no problem with the Negro defending the Jew or whatever. It's your right. But at least when you defend trash, make it a clear and honest analysis based on one's behavior. Don't make excuses for the behavior and try to make it seem like it was part of the norm. How do you justify somebody being on the court for 17 years and having only one black clerk and two Baba Louie clerks? Now, me, myself, personally, I'm disgusted that there was more Baba Louie clerks than black clerks. I'm just going to keep it 100. The point of the matter is, this Negro, I don't know what our problem really is, to be honest with you, have this feeling that a so-called liberal is the savior of black America. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So we're about now that the white man is in a position to have the court control the court, they make it seem like we now in dire straits because of so-called civil rights, abortion, and all of the other muckety-muckster stuff. Now, I like to know, and maybe Richard could help me on this, do the Negro right now have any sustained civil rights, Richard?
They tell us that it's being chipped away. Do we have any? I don't know how to answer that.
Now, that's kind of dangerous. A man of your knowledge and wisdom don't know how to answer that. Richard, you got to get on your job, man. They got you at that museum doing the Lord's work, and you supposed to be one of those special Negroes. You supposed to be able to... answer that question. They'll take your NAACP card away from you.
I'll say this in short is that because I come from the perspective at this point, and I keep raising this question, I ask the point, when did black people not become property?
There you go.
See, you know, and as it relates to America, because we were private property at one point, and then we became federal property. But at no point did black people, when you use the term sovereignty, that I understand, or the way I understand it, and that's why I speak to my ignorance. You know, we have never made, as a people, said whether we want to participate, had that internal debate about do we want it to participate or we want to be a separate people. We had that opportunity after the Civil War. That their civil war, but we didn't actually have that discussion amongst ourselves. But there's no indication to me that we've ever not became property. in the context of the quote-unquote American capitalist governmental democratic republican legal structure.
Now, Richard, do you really believe that? Or are you just talking? Because, you know, if you say that to the Negro tell you you out your mind, man. Negro will tell you you are absolutely out your mind if you say something like that.
I believe it. And they, some say, you know, question, and I have questioned academics about it, especially around the question of citizenship rights. Martha Jones, particularly, who I think did an excellent job in her book about birthright citizen, from a legal perspective, things get murky in the 19th century. And when we look at even in our Elliot, you bring it up all the time from the civil rights. What's that? 1866. And then we get another civil rights in 1964. And I believe there's one somewhere in between. So to your question, if you are, why do you need to have all these bills? And then just recently, Byron Allen and Comcast called into question whether, you know, did you have to have, protection, you know, as, whatever that's called, and in relationship to economic development. So, that's why when you ask that question, because of my belief and what I see legal and history says about Black people in general.
Says something otherwise. No, I totally agree with you. I think, sadly and unfortunately, that our people have this feeling that we are a part of this society and we have a position in this society and that we make so much of a difference in this society based on if we're now going to vote for this damn Joe Biden against the other devil, Donald Trump. I mean, I always say this and I will continuously say this. I mean, the reality is, if your boy Trump wins again, you can't blame Black people for it. You have to blame white people and voter suppression, because the way I'm witnessing the behavior of this Negro, it's like his life is really dependent at this time on getting this devil out of office. I mean, it's... To me, it's kind of sickening, man.
If he wins again, they will blame Black people, mm-hmm. because just like Richard and you were saying, because you're property, you were told to do something, and as far as they're concerned, you didn't do it. Now,
there's no legitimacy in blaming Black folks for.
Wait a minute. Who was blamed?
Blame is white folks.
Yeah, but I understand that. But who was blamed when he won this first time? Black folks. Now, when they voted for Obama, I think they voted for him 98% or something like that, 96%. Mm-hmm. I think when they voted for Clinton, it was like 91 or something. If you're voting over 90% for any candidate, you almost vote. It might as well be 100%. But white women was the one that put Trump in office.
Right.
You heard Black folks being dumped on about, you didn't come out and vote. You didn't come. In fact, you heard the former first lady admonish Black people talking about they didn't come out and they didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. Well, she ain't That's stupid. Right. She know it was white women that didn't vote for Hillary Clinton.
That's right.
They voted for Donald Trump. 56. He had 56% of the white women vote. So it wasn't Black folks that didn't put that broad in there. It was white women that double crossed their own white sister.
Yeah, but it's black folks who go along with this narrative and allow for this narrative to play itself out and accept themselves as being the bad guys in a situation of protecting white European interests. It's just madness. It sounds like Stockholm Syndrome if you think about it. Here it is, you're doing the best that you can. And the problem is that what's being done, nobody's assisting you. Those that you're voting for are not doing the necessary things to bring out those that need to be brought out. I'll say this, and I'll say this to the end. The only person in all of this voting rhetoric that I've heard that has a concrete and clear plan on how to push back and beat this sick bastard Trump, to me, is Reverend Barber. And I'm no fan of no pork chop skinny preacher. But I will say this about him. He does have a plan, an idea, and a way of doing it that these Democrats, the DNC, will not listen to and go about doing it. And I mean, it's shown 4 years ago when they didn't listen and allow Hillary Clinton to lose. You know what I'm saying? But see, what I think our people don't realize is, and I mean, I don't think they really get it. I really truly believe that the Democrats are in cahoots with the Republican Party in sustaining whiteness.
Wait a minute now. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah. Hold on. You said, Elliot, let me make sure I heard you said. He said he believed.
I believe it's the Democratic Party.
The only reason I say that, Jay,
the Republicans and sustaining whiteness.
This sustaining is the system. Whiteness.
Because I tell you why, and then you can say what you have to say. Those that are at the upper echelons of the DNC, those who are the political pundits, those that are at the head of the gravy train of the Democratic Party will not lose their damn position in this country if the Republicans are still in office. And you tell me I'm wrong. Then the bottom line is you got to be in cahoots.
Well, are you, listen,
you're not doing everything necessary to gain power. Come on, bro. Think about it.
But all you have to do to prove what you're saying is look at the guy that's running on the Democratic side. He's a perfect example of what you're talking about.
So how could Richard in his right mind try to question what the hell I'm saying?
Because you said you believe. See, it's one thing when you believe something, you're not sure.
Yeah, but I think he was saying.
When you believe in something, you know that song when it says, "When you believe in something."
Well, you gotta finish the words.
What he said. The bottom line is, if you think about it,
I wanted you to sing the chorus. I wanted you to sing the words. You just.
I don't know all the words right now. I forgot the words. You know, plus I can't sing anyway. But seriously, if you think about it, how am I wrong? If you put it in its total scope.
I didn't say that you was wrong.
I
didn't say you was wrong. I say you are operating like, and I hate to do this, but I'm saying, because when we say we don't believe, I mean, we believe something, we're saying we're not 100% sure. But
I'm 100%
when you say
that
this year's system was designed to provide power and control for white men or white people of wealth, that's not a belief. That's a fact.
I'm gonna go with fact. Because if I have to be honest and I have to analyze it and I have to think about it, none of those people who are at the forefront of the Democratic Party will lose their position if your boy
loses
or wins. Now here come Otis. What you got to say, Otis? Because I got to hear this.
Yeah, let me let you go. You want to debate?
But listen, Elliot and Richard, seriously. I mean, do I? People may think I'm crazy, but if you be honest and truthful about it, right? None of these individuals are going to lose their position. None of them are not going to be in a position to where as they're going to lose their job and then go hungry. Because they're always going to be, because of their recognition, their name and their association, going to be able to fall back. Now, they may lose $10,000 or $20,000 a year, but they're going to have a job. They're going to eat. They're going to be able, if they got any sense of intelligence, to manipulate and move and put themselves back in a position. You know what I mean? But think about it. And I'll leave you with this. Just think about this. Those black pundits that was in play in 2016 and those whites that was in play from the Democratic side in 2016, have you heard of any of them bastards going hungry? Think about it. I'll go on mute.
Thank you for your call. Listen, we're going to take a break, another brief break. We got about 10 minutes left in the program. You can jump in here. We got two callers left so far, but you can jump in with the time we have left by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global KometsU Black family, to join your interconnected KometsU Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the Digital Plantation.
Know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
Have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen, we're the singers and the dancers, and we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
Yeah.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:20 here in the city of Philadelphia. We got a few minutes left here in the program. Let's go straight back to the phones. Let's go to 215. 215.
Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Our praise be to Allah. First, when the sister that you had on in the first hour, she mentioned generational wealth. And that's something, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, that we as black people have definitely have to continue to strive for is generational wealth. Because, you know, and you know, because of white racism and systematic racism, we are, of course, behind the eight ball. But we have to try to continue to make the strides we can. This is why I put such an onus on these black politicians that who are in a position to help create black generational wealth. Because a lot of white people have passed wealth through insurance, through home ownership, things like that. And these sorry Negroes that we got on the federal and state and local level, and they was pushing a black agenda like they're supposed to, having their head up Israel's behind all the damn time, because they could be so further along as far as, you know, creating black generational wealth throughout black America around the country, you know. But these sorry Negroes, again, they in black face, but they sure ain't doing a damn thing for black people. And let me say this, Elliot, to Brother Jay is actually right. Reverend William Barber, I like him because, like I said, I don't, you know, care about, you know, about him being a Christian man, because I don't get caught. I deal with a man who he's a good man. From what I see about Reverend Barber, he's committed. He loves our people, and I'll support that brother in anything he do because he's committed. Because, like I said, I don't care whether you're Muslim, Christian, Jew, Hebrew, Israelite, whatever you, or no religion for that matter. If that's what you believe, if you for our people, I'm down with you. Because, like I said, you got a group of Negroes out here that say Assalamu Alaikum. I don't care whether they may in the Nation of Islam or the Orthodox or Sunni. Some of these Negroes, they say Assalamu Alaikum, but they're phony Negroes. So they, you know, they might share the same dietary laws I share as far as eating and don't eat pork, but they out there working against our people. I work with William Bob and anybody, any other brother that's a Christian, whether they can eat all the pork they want, as long as they support our people. What he eat, as those saying, or what he eat don't make me, you know. So it's irrelevant. But my point is that you got a group of Negroes here in Philadelphia back when Trump first got elected. They call themselves Black Muslims for Trump. I'm saying, how any black man or any Muslim could support a devil like Trump who has castigated Muslims from his inception? So you gonna sit there and support a clown like that? And I don't know if you and Richard have been paying attention to your buddy Steve Harvey, Elliot. You know, he on it. I didn't hear the broadcast, but a friend of mine told me he was on there, you know, railing against Trump the other day on his show, saying that black people got to get out and vote because Trump's so bad. And I'm saying to myself, correct me if I'm wrong, Elliot, wasn't he the same one that met with Trump during the first time?
Yeah, he was. Maybe he didn't maybe he didn't get what he thought he deserved. I don't know.
Oh, that's what it was. Oh, so Stevie boy didn't get what he wanted, so now he's mad with the Donald. So he's mad with the Donald. Ain't that nice? Wow. I'm unbelievable. These Negroes, I tell you, they're like the Joe. That's why the white, that's like Minister Farrakhan said on that clip you just played. That's why the white man don't respect these Negroes, because they're a joke. They're a complete joke and stuff, man. And Brother Elliot, I'm so glad that you brought up about some of these black college presidents. Some of them are disgraced. I remember several years ago when some of you, to quote my dear brother and friend, Brother Jay, and I hope I'm saying it right, Jay, these poor chicken-eating Negroes. I'm telling you, that former president of Howard University, Patrick Swaggart, you talking about the coon, if ever was the coon, it was him, during his tenure as the president of Howard, on two different occasions, this Negro, and think about it, Ellen, with this scenario here. You got a black college, Howard University, one of the prestigious black universities in America. This Negro supposedly answering and dealing with the concerns of black students, black community, black parents. But like so many of these Negroes, whether they be in a black college for some reason, I ain't gonna say so because I know what the reason is. These white Jews, so-called white Jews, control these Negroes. That Negro during his tenure at Howard, he tried twice on two different occasions to block Brother Khalid Muhammad from speaking there, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan from speaking there. And, of course, both times he was shot down because the strong black student union up there, they said, how dare you? Ain't no damn white folks, no Jews going to tell us who we can have our university. And they overruled the Negro, and he had to acquiesce and let Khalid Muhammad speak there and let Minister Farrakhan speak there. But just a sad state of affairs. When these Negroes, they let this white man, especially the one that called themselves the Jews, that they say in the Bible, and this is coming from the Bible, it's their words, those that say they are Jews, they are not. So, I mean, you know, this hold that they got on these Negroes, it just boggles my mind. When these white Jews say jump, some of these Negroes say how high. I mean, it's just amazing with these Negroes, man. They just got no guts whatsoever. They tell these Negroes what to do. You know, like the minister said about the clip you played, where he said you talk all that big woolly talk when you're in your congregation about how Jesus is the power and everything, but you in your own church here in Philadelphia, I'll let you know the story. You going out of your way to the crowd blues for them. I'm so, if nobody gonna say I'm sorry, I'm gonna be the one that say I'm sorry and stuff about some legs. Offensive comments that Minister Rodney made, and here they call out people monkeys every chance they get, but you don't find offense with that, but you plead sorry to these devils about some comments that Minister Rodney made. I mean, you just get so sick of these cowardly, spineless Negroes, man. They got no backbone. They sickening, man. They make you enough to make you want to puke some of them. I'm just being honest, man. They sickening, you know. But anyway, like I said, I know that I was getting late, man. I just wanted to, you know, call and express myself. And see, it's, you know, it's a lot going on, Elliot, because, again, you see things being put in place, like you said, about, and I close these last two comments, so the next call I could get on, Elliot, I make it real brief. When you said about the white women, you was telling Brother Jay about the white women that voted for Trump. Now, and mind you now, Elliot, this the scenario here. Remember, these same white women that voted for Donald Trump, this came after that clip came out. When that clip came out with Trump, he grabbed women by the genitalia.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I grab them and I do this to them, I, you know, and all that stuff. They still voted for him. And by the way, let the record show, for the time for the Wicked List audience that's listening around the country and around the world, these racist white women that supported Donald Trump, these are the same racist white women that was cheering when Bill Cosby got convicted. But they had no problem voting for Donald Trump, though. So, I mean, so you see how white supremacy and white racism works hand in hand. You know what I mean? It works hand in hand. And like Brother Jay said, these spineless Negroes, whether it be Michelle Obama or the rest of that, you know, they instead of blaming white women for that idiot being elected, they're going to blame black people. And the same thing will happen again. If by chance Biden don't win, they're not going to blame white women or white men. They're going to blame black people again. Because this is how spineless these Negroes are, man. They're sickening. You know, but anyway, Brother and Richard, thanks for your time, my brothers. And I'll just put me on mute, Brother Elliot, and I'll listen to the rest of the show.
Talk to you.
You're welcome.
Let me grab these last two, Richard. Let's go to caller. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say I enjoyed the show today, and I think it's wonderful that the whole concept with the sisters, how they actually went out and you know, did something. They wasn't just talking the talk. A lot of times, I have a thing with, like, you know, they have these, a lot of the times these churches and Christians, and, you know, they'll talk all this talk in church, but then there's nothing that they're doing about it. And they actually went out here and they, you know, did something that I think is phenomenal. It would really be a good thing if we could have Black Wall Street in, you know, in my day and time while I'm here on this planet, because I've heard about the Black Wall Streets and I've heard the history of what happened. I don't know, I forget the brother's name was, I was saying to myself, we know that they're going to come for them. We know, because if you study history, you understand what they do. But I mean, even if they, you know, even if we do understand what they're going to do to us, we can still try to, you know, our best is still try to build and try to, you know, just still to, don't let what they've done in the past to us and what they're doing to us right now stop us from still trying to better our situation. So, and I liked how she, how she said that she's prepared that they're going to have security because I guess, you know, she understands that, yeah, when they come, you know, they may be coming, you know, to try to sabotage. They may be coming with guns or whatever. So, you know, we need to, like, have a security or have some type of, you know, you can't have an army, but you need to have something to protect, be able to protect that town because, like, like you say, they're going to come for us. So I don't know if they're going to come with the, if they don't come with the guns, they can always get us with the biological weapons and the water or whatever. They have ways they're going to come for us. But that should not stop us from trying because no matter what, even if we don't try, they're still coming for us. Like, you know, so I just think that that's a good thing that they're doing. And I hope it works out. And I mean, if it works out, I think it would be great if they would be able to get that swarming and things like that together. But, you know, where they could go out and do the, you know, go out into the food deserts and help out the other parts of, I guess, Georgia or wherever else that may need you know, food to supply to our areas. And that's all I have to share. And thank you again.
Thank you for your contribution, sister.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Let's go to a last call. And let's go to 773.
You got me, brother?
Yep.
Brother, uh-huh. I want to thank you two brothers for taking this call. Sometimes I know it's very difficult. That last sister got off. Sound like my homegirl here in Chicago, Sister Temple. Now, with all due respect, the system of racism and white supremacy put Donna Hitler in. They put them all in. No white woman put them in. They put in Mickey Mouse if they want. They make me the president if they want. This is their system. They run it. What else do they have to do to show us that? Now, any slave that do not want to hear about genocide and extermination of human beings that's been going on for over 3,000 years, any slave that do not want to hear about that, then turn your volume down and don't listen to me. Now, the process of understanding or perceiving a coming evil has put many people into a situation of the utmost danger. What that simply means is the masses of human beings that have been exterminated in the past, they never saw extermination coming. Oh, they saw themselves being treated unfairly. They saw themselves being brutalized, locked up, moved here, moved there. But they had no idea that the people doing this to them was going to eventually exterminate them. And that is exactly where we find ourselves today. Anybody who had the wherewithal to get out of here to save some grandchild, save some son or daughter life, or if you have somewhere to go, I advise you to get them out of here yesterday. They are de-think. Now, these some smart people. That's why we listen to a show like yours. These are thinkers. They ain't no Jeff Rowe people. We're thinkers. They are showing images over the world are black people being assassinated on camera, dehumanized. They are showing these images across the world. They want the world to see these images. Why do they want the world to see the images of black people being assassinated, brutalized on camera? Eventually, it desensitizes the world to what's happening to you. You keep seeing somebody getting their head blowed off every day. Pretty soon, you say, oh, man, another joker got his head blowed off. You're getting desensitized to it. And this is what they are doing right now.
Now, we got a UN headquarters in New York. Think about that, Diva. Look at them big, pretty buildings the UN got up there in New York. They are shopping right down the street from. Look at that. How in the hell you going to have a UN headquarters in New York City, in the country of Mr. Democracy, Mr. Human Rights, and black people being assassinated on camera? And you got a psychopath like Donald Hitler in office? You don't hear nothing from no UN? You don't hear nothing from no Negro even going up to the UN? Look what we're dealing with. Now listen, people. The psychopaths, they run Earth and they run space. Get that in your head. So when I say go to the UN, the UN ain't going to do nothing. They ain't did nothing in Palestine since 1948. Think they going to do something for us? But going to the UN tells the world that we are in grave danger here, that we fear for our safety, that we want a human rights watch over us. Then the UN got to show. They going to have to ignore us, or they going to have to show. But it tells the world that we fear for our safety here. Right now, the world is not seeing that. They see some video of us getting killed by some Blue Club Klansman, but nobody is saying that we fear that we can be slaughtered. This is why I suggest to any slave, if you can get out of here, get out. These psychopaths run the world. We are in their wheelhouse. We cannot stop them from slaughtering us. You might be able to escape. And I say again, going to the UN, you would tell your story to the world before we are slaughtered. These people are psychopaths. You got 300 police in Philadelphia. Make a racist post. What kind of mess is that, man? That's sickening. Listen, they got these young psychopaths. They are hit men. They've been brainwashed by the older psychopaths. We know that. Dylann Roof. Dylann Roof going to church, kill 9 goddamn people, assassinate them. He left one old black woman alive. Imagine that woman seeing them bodies around her. He tells her, he asks her, "You know why I left you alive?" She said, "No." He said, "I left you alive because I want you to tell the world what I did here." Think about that. Dylann Roof spreading terror, fear into us. And we didn't even take advantage of it. Now, Dylann Roof, he's supposed to go to jail, and he's supposed to slip on a bar of soap. He's supposed to choke on his food. But he stays, they keep him alive. Why? Because Dylann Roof is a martyr. Now, there's two type of martyrs. Listen carefully. There's two type of martyrs. There's the one that gives his life to carry out his mission. There's a greater martyr. He carried out his mission, and he's still alive to show the other young white boys, look, I carry out my mission, man. We is on the move. Look at me. I'm still alive. What happens after Dylann Roof? One white boy after another doing a terrorist act because they know they got government support. That's why Donald Hitler is in. That's why they put Mr. Hitler in Germany. Listen carefully. Mr. Hitler did not overthrow the German government. Anything I say, you can check it out. Mussolini, he did not overthrow the government in Italy. All of these countries have a power structure. They have people that run it. They put Hitler in. They put Mussolini in. And they put this Donald Hitler in. You're going to have to ask yourself, people, why did they put this psychopath in? What is he supposed to do? Look what he doing. Terror exploding. He don't say nothing. Don't do nothing. Tell him the next white boy, yeah, it's on. Let's go. Now, if you think you can stop that, you stay here and stop it. But if you think you can't stop the greatest terror ever walked the planet, if you think you can't stop him, then you start thinking about your safety. Your 9-year-old granddaughter, a daughter, your son. These psychopaths gonna take them back to antebellum slavery. They gonna rape and brutalize them day and night. They have to do it. They're psychopaths. What else they gonna do? Look at their conduct. What else do they have to do to let us know they are inhuman, vicious, psychopaths? And guess what? They love it. They love that stuff. And look at the Caucasian woman. Check her out. She's supposed to be a mother. She let these sick psychopaths take her sons and her children and make them a killer. And what do she say? A mother. Mother took the young boy up to do that shooting in Wisconsin. Drove him up there. Man, you think this stuff is a movie? It's real. And the media don't come down on them. Nobody come down on them. Got some Negroes in Washington talking about a black caucus or something. Look at them Negroes, man. Our safety and our survival depending on them Uncle Tom up there just getting a check. Is that's what our survival depending on? That's why I tell you, if you're looking for them for any kind of safety or fight, you might as well run for your life. Now listen, some of you people haven't been in the military. Once this assault starts on us, if you live near some woods, your only safety is to head for the woods. A lot of people, oh, that boy Cray Lee talking that crazy stuff. Many people ain't been in the military. If they can find you, they can kill you. The woods will offer you some cover. Now, if you make it to them woods, do not move in the daytime. The psychopath sniper is going to be out there. They love to sniper you. They rather sniper you than to breathe. So they're going to be out there. And I don't know where you're going to go, but be careful heading north in the winter because it's going to be real cold. This is where we are, people. And, brother, I really appreciate y'all for letting me tell the people this because I know it's not easy to tell people that we're dealing with vicious, inhumane psychopaths that mean they not only don't mean us no good, brothers, they mean humanity no good. They don't even care about their own darn people. Got these young white boys out here just taking people's life. What kind of human being is these? Boy, him supposed to be a police, Blue Club Klan, shot Laquan McDonald 16 times. Choked the boy to death in Minnesota while he's smiling. Look what we're dealing with here. Come on, stop playing. We're dealing with a great evil here. I don't see us defeating them here. If you see them, then fine. I don't see it. But anybody out there don't see themselves defeating the greatest killer ever walked the planet, psychopath? If you don't see yourself defeating them, then you need to think about escape. And if you can't escape, you need to think about preparing yourself for this slaughter that's coming. That's why I tell you a lot of people ain't been in the military. That you got to head for the woods. And in the prime time, you need to be out there bearing you some supplies. So you already have them. They got to be in the ground, waterproof, airproof containers. Again, I don't know where you're going to go, but don't head north in the winter. And Canada, for those who up that way and trying to go to Canada, is white supremacy. Australia, New Zealand, Mexico. See, all these people. At white supremacy. And that's where black people find themselves. John Henry Clark said the African has no friends. And look at them Africans over there, man. They next. Look at them. Man been in there on them. Chinese moving in on them. And the man got the nerve to tell the African, y'all still owe us. Can you imagine? Man, it's just, brother, you can't make this stuff up. That mother went on there and raped their country, killed millions of people. Now he tells him they owe him. Keeping them down. Can't grow. Can't build. But you still might can go to Africa and live your life out. That's where we are. And you go somewhere and live your life out. Or can you survive here in these woods and live your life out? Now, I know Brother Richard, y'all say, I ain't running nowhere. That's fine. That's fine. You know, the good Lord don't call us all on the same day in the same way. But you look at the move, what happened to them. Look at the SLA, Patricia Hearst out in L.A., ball of fire in that house. David Koresh, Texas, ball of fire. If they can find you, all of us in the military already know this. If they can find you, they can kill you. So you're going to have to get on the run. Brother, let me thank y'all again for telling the sheep and the slaves what time it is. And look, man, it's going to get worse and worse. Look at it. We ain't children. You see it getting worse. It ain't because I said it. Look at it. Every day they doing some crazy stuff on camera all across the world. Dehumanizing us. And the hell they going to dehumanize us with a UN headquarters in New York? What kind of message is this? Because you ain't got no leadership. There's no leadership. So you got to look out for yourself.
All right, bring it on home, brother.
Oh, beg your pardon?
Bring it on home for me.
Okay, let me bring it on home for you. The people down in Georgia, what they finna do, I wish them well. But let me tell you something. I ain't never been to Philly. But I heard about a lot of black people in Philly that had money. And what did they build? We had so many black people in Chicago with money. Listen to me. I can't count them. Millionaires. But you know what they built? Nothing. They had a little business making money, but they didn't build community. They did not build community. Johnson Publication, a black radio station, Johnson Products. I can go on and on. It's a list of them. Didn't build nothing. But when I was younger coming up here, I didn't know it. I thought them Negroes were doing something. I'm from Birmingham, born and raised there. There were so many black people in Birmingham with money, man, you couldn't believe it. But you know what they built? Nothing. All they had was churches, a funeral home. And when the white man left Birmingham, downtown, big buildings, man, big office buildings, department store, boarded up. White man said, okay, y'all Negroes think y'all want a town, you can run it? We're going to leave. We're going to show you something. Them Negroes couldn't run that town. I used to visit my wife's people outside of Detroit. I never went downtown. They had a boy to tell me, hey, man, downtown Detroit, same way. Big building, boarded up. But blacks running Detroit, got them jobs and GM school teachers running stuff. And Motown, and y'all couldn't be a Detroit? If them people couldn't do it with what they had, how in the hell are we going to do something today with Ray Ray and Bay Bay? And we still got these Negroes. Look at Jordan now, I'm talking about giving somebody some money. This other Negro giving some. They ain't feeling nothing. Give you a few dollars. What that supposed to do? How long is supposed to last? You're not building community. Throwing out a few dollars. I did some. They not serious. Because they don't want to challenge white supremacy. I understand that. And I ain't mad about that. I'm just letting you know this is what time it is. I want to thank you again, brother, for taking this call.
Thanks for your call, brother.
Thank you.
Richard, we come to the end of another program, man.
Yeah.
You know what? I didn't I'll be in touch with her because I got to pull up that email. But I didn't write that. Did you write that contact information down?
No, I didn't. I thought she was sending it to me.
Yeah, she did send it to me, but I got to pull it up. It's on another screen. But you know, I'll have it out there on the Time for Awakening website or whatever, so people can get can email her, get in touch if they're interested in getting something started in their area. Because she said that a lot of people have contacted her from different areas of the country wanting to do the same thing. So mm-hmm. the contact information will be out there, and we'll make sure we'll say it on another upcoming program. Before we leave tonight, I just want to give the lineup on Time for An Awakening Media on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting dialogue and conversation on African Perspectives. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. From 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. From 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Maria Combine and Sister Nataki Combine. And from 9 to 10, First and Third Mondays, Conversation Reparations, that's in Cobra's program. On Tuesday, 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Thursday, after 7, with host Shani B. On Fridays, Time for an Awakening is back from 8 to 10. On Saturday, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And on Saturday evening, later that Saturday evening, from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with host Alfonso Watkins, and then on Sunday, Time for an Awakening is back from 7 until. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Play.